The world loves a good Savior story. We all know it because any of us can point to a variety of books or stories we've heard, movies that are out that portray a Savior of different kinds. Our daughters were 5 and 7 when the first Harry Potter book hit the shelves in the United States. They were instantly hooked. We were instantly hooked. And it was a tremendous story about good versus evil. The stories where there's a hero or a shero. In this case, Harry Potter was the hero, the savior. We know it was a great savior story because conservative Christians were up in arms about it. Did not like it and wanted it to be taken off of shelves in a variety of places. Our own daughters had a little talk from their grandparents at one point on the other side about the fact that they should not be reading these books. They did not want the millennial generation, of which they were a part, they did not want that generation to accept Harry Potter as their savior. You're laughing. I'm serious. They did not want that generation of millennials to believe in witches and wizards. It was a serious matter for them. And somehow these kids were so into it that they convinced their parents to take them to bookstores at midnight for the release of the next book. They lived their childhood years in anticipation of when the next book was going to be released and when the final book was published, and I know some of you are in this. When they read the end of that last book, they cried. Not because of the ending, but because they knew it was the last book. It was a savior story that spoke deeply to so many. It was, in so many ways, a classic Savior story. It was good versus evil, and in the end, good triumphed. Somehow, long after Jesus died, his story became first and foremost a Savior story. And it all goes back to original sin. So last week we talked about original sin. Again, in brief, it's the idea that God created a perfect world and into the perfect world put perfect human beings and created the perfect garden for them to live in and created a tree of the knowledge of good and evil and gave the command that if you eat of this one tree, you will die. Along came the serpent who talked to Eve, who then talked to Adam. They both ate. And at that point, they were blemished. Sin and stain entered the world. From that point on, Adam's seed was bad. And so when they had sex and procreated, that bad seed went everywhere. And every person born, every human being, is born in original sin, with that bad seed. That's original sin in brief. We also looked at some of the myths around original sin last week. And this is what we talked about, that it never says in the story that God created a perfect world. It never says in the story that God created humans to be perfect, nor does it say, by the way, that God created the humans to be immortal. It doesn't say that the serpent came in from the outside. It doesn't say that Eve really had to twist Adam's arm in order to eat, and so the whole thing is her fault. It doesn't say those things. And neither does the story end in the death of Adam and Eve. Instead, what we have is the picture of a God who is so angry that God banishes them from the garden, shuts the door, locks it, says they can never return, and leaves them to wander and die on their own. So the image that's left with us after this idea of original sin is this image of an angry God, a God that demands death because of the sin that happened. And that's how we get the story of salvation. So in the Old Testament, before we get to Jesus, there are sacrifices that are made. The priests in the temples give sacrifices in order to appease this angry God, in order to please God. Mind you, the sacrifices have to be without blemish. The animal, if it's given, has to be an animal without blemish. And so we see how easily that leads up to the story in the New Testament related to salvation. Now, last week, one of the things we also talked about was this scenario, which I hope you appreciated the cartoon on the front of the bulletin today. The scenario last week was, we are in the water and we're drowning, so that's original sin. We are on our way to sure and certain death. And God then throws into the water a life preserver. Now, how we imagine ourselves and how we imagine God in this scenario is what makes up the theologies related to sin and to salvation. So we talked about John Calvin, who believes that we're all totally depraved and can't do anything ourselves. John Calvin would say, God swoops in with the life preserver for some, leaves others to drown, but for those that God has chosen, God will give the life preserver and actually put it on the person and then haul the person up out of the water. That is the scenario in his theology, the theology that undergirds us in the Presbyterian denomination. So then we get to the place of salvation, which is the next part of this. So already you can see the linkage. If we are condemned to die because God demands perfection, then we need to be rescued, right? We're in the water, there needs to be a rescue operation put in place, right? And so there are many who would say that Jesus is the perfect rescue operation. And so this is how it goes. God is angry. God demands perfection, knows that we will never be there because we, of course, are born into sin. So because God also loves us, God says, I will provide the way so that I don't have to smite you. I will provide the way for you to be saved. So God comes in human form and agrees to die in our place. Now, when I was a kid, I've told you, I was taught some pretty interesting theology. So I can remember when I was about 10 years old being given this scenario to explain salvation. So I was to picture a courtroom. God is the judge. I was on trial, and I am declared guilty and given the sentence of death. So as I'm handcuffed and being led away to the gas chamber, Jesus steps in and says, I will die in your place. You are free to go. And so then Jesus is led off and dies in my place. Now, the other thing that was said to me is, and every time I sin, it's as though I'm killing Jesus again. So it's a pretty heavy duty kind of theology. But as weird as it sounds, it is still a great deal out there in terms of Christianity and trying to save people. That's the salvation that's offered. That there is nothing you can do about your own sin, but Jesus has done it for you. And so if you give your life to Jesus and try to live like Jesus, that is your best thanks, since he died for you. So we're looking at these theologies, we're looking at original sin, we're looking at salvation because we are a progressive Christian church. And I mentioned last week Episcopal Bishop John Shelby Spong, who says, you know, it's so easy to deconstruct theology, to look at it and kind of go to the ridiculous places. What is not easy is to begin reconstructing it. And so if we are not a church that is about saving people, what are we about? And what is it that we do believe? Many of us would say we don't believe in original sin. Some of us probably believe more like Matthew Fox in original goodness or original blessing. And some of us have never believed in that kind of old way, that old theology related to salvation. And yet many of us have believed parts of it. And so how do we come to a theology that then informs our mission and ministry as a church? What is it that we're doing? So we talked about that last week in the Wednesday Bible study. Talked about the question of, what is salvation? What do we mean by it? What is it? And we talked a bit, and different people had some ideas, but it was a little bit hard to kind of flesh it out. But when we talked about the question of, what is it that we do as a church? Why are we as a church? As we talked about that, we got a little bit clearer then about this question of salvation and what are we doing. So here's a brief attempt, because we don't have all the time in the world. Here is a brief attempt at reconstruction. We know one of the reasons that the Savior story sells for kids, for teenagers, for adults, for everybody, is that every single one of us, even from a very young age, we become aware that there really is evil in the world. There are good people and there are bad people. There are nice people and there are mean people. And because of that knowledge, we long for something. We long for something that will end up being good news. So we can say, probably, that most of us would say, yeah, we get that there is brokenness in our world. We even get that there is brokenness in us. Probably not a single person sitting here this morning would be able to say, I always act and live from my best place. Right? We all have those moments when we act from that place of brokenness. We hurt ourselves, we hurt other people, we hurt our planet, we participate in corporate evil in different ways. We know that. We know there is brokenness. And so, is there a difference between drowning in the water, between this idea that we are all born with this stain or this imperfection? Is there a difference between that and saying, we know there is brokenness in us, in others, in our world? Yeah, there's a big difference. There's a big difference between those two things. So if we say there is brokenness, then that leads to the next part, which is, we are all in need of healing. And the reading that Dave read this morning, I love, because it's Jesus saying to all the people that he was ministering to, you are now healed healers. Go and take the kingdom to someone else. Now that's very different than the picture of salvation, right? Very different. A book for you to read is by an author, Carter Hayward, who years ago wrote a book called Saving Jesus from the Right. Excellent little book. In it, she does this beautiful description of how it wasn't just that God was incarnate in Jesus, it's that God also becomes incarnate in each one of us. And that is how we become healed healers. Not healed in the sense of once and for all, healed in the sense of healed and always healing, right? And then we go out into the world and we take that healing with us and become healers. And that then informs what we're doing as a church. So we come here on Sundays together as community because we are broken and in need of healing. We know that in community we can experience that healing in a completely different way. When I have lost my hope, I come because you can still hope. When you have lost your belief, you come because I can still believe. We come because we get strength in community that we do not get when we are sitting at home on our own. Something happens in community that helps us then to go out and be healers in the world. It informs what we do with social justice, social action. We are called not just to heal each other, we are called to heal our world, and that's what we're about. So we need to keep remaking and reconstructing our ideas about sin and salvation. And we're going to be on that path. We're going to look at some things differently. The hymns that we chose this morning are hymns that say something about salvation. After the sermon this morning, we're going to sing, O Sacred Head Now Wounded. It is a song that many of us have grown up with and love. And the theology in the song is salvation as it's been portrayed for centuries. We sing it because it's familiar and because we love it, and we're in need of new songs, new liturgies. We are a congregation that could have a lot to say as theology is redone, reconstructed, re-imaged, reframed. So we need to be about that, about offering our voice to the conversation. And we need to get clear for ourselves because pretty soon, as your pastor nominating committee begins interviewing people in several months, they're going to say, the pastors that are looking at you, what do you believe? So it's important. It's important for us individually. It's important for us as a community to continue to work out what it is we believe. We are reflecting.